Okay, again, my name is Brian. If you have any questions or problems logging into the notes during this conference, you can email me at editor@marketingexperiments.com. The URL for the notes for today's conference is mecgroups.com/MEC_research_log. And we'll ask you to refresh that page twice during today's conference as we add some data. Some key commands on your phone that you might find useful. *4 will increase the volume on your line if you're having any trouble hearing. And *6 will mute your line, which is useful if you're in a noisy room. And then to unmute your line to ask a question, you'll have to hit *6 again. Some upcoming research that we've got planned. Our next web clinic is Wednesday, January 5th at 4 p.m. EST. It's the same time as this clinic. And our topic today will be utilizing eBay stores as a marketing channel. So if you'd like to participate in that clinic on eBay stores, you can go ahead and email me at editor@marketingexperiments.com and just put eBay stores in the subject line or something so I know which clinic you're referring to, and I'll get a spot reserved for you. Again, that's Wednesday, January 5th at 4 p.m. EST. Somebody have a question?
I want to point out, Brian, just a note on eBay. Some time ago, a few years ago, we did a relationship, in fact, did some research with a gentleman named Jalali Hall. Jalali was the co-founder of Infopia. He holds 5 different patents, I think, right now. Infopia built, he raised millions of dollars and built a intelligent engine that enabled people to list products across multiple marketplaces. And that company is now a large company, reasonably for the net, and growing and doing well. And Jalali, who's a major stakeholder, has brought in a professional management team and is working full-time as a researcher with our group and involved in some pretty significant projects. Yeah, he's here with us in Florida now. He's going to be conducting research all year long with us on eBay and marketplace opportunities. And you don't, if you're a retailer, haven't figured out how to use eBay effectively, or you have issues and questions, you want to get on this conference. You'll be co-leading it with me. A lot of new data and original research that you're going to be getting. In fact, we probably will have a whole separate issue of the journals just for that. Just keep that in mind. And the testing the free trial offers is pretty significant. A tiny, tiny adjustment in the way you do a free trial offer can make it very successful or unsuccessful. And we'll talk about that. Of course, pay-per-click tracking, particularly now in light of click fraud, that conference is going to be very important. So having said that, I think it's time that we get underway. A number of the team members are on the phone today. They'll be participating. Some of our designers are on the group as well, and they'll be participating with us as we move forward into the fall. The topic is a bit unusual. Brian, a lot of people have joined us. Go ahead, and before I go any further, give the instructions one more time for the people that recently have joined us for accessing notes, etc.
Okay, sure. The URL is mecgroups.com/MEC_research_log. Again, it's mecgroups.com/MEC_research_log. And you should have also received that URL in an email today. And if you need that URL or you didn't receive that email, my email address is editor@marketingexperiments.com, and I'll be checking that throughout the conference if you have any questions.
Okay. With that in mind, we'll move into this next topic. And it is an unusual topic, and candidly, I think it's very focused. It may not be for the average reader that we have of the journal. It applies to virtually every reader. But I warn you in advance that this is dealing with a very specific issue that's probably underestimated in terms of its impact on your marketing, and that's why we've done a research report on it. The topic's page weight, and how to dramatically lower the load times and increase conversion using developed and a lot of research. So we're going to look at several questions. The first thing is just let me explain a little bit about what page weight is for anyone that might not know, and then talk about its impact. Page weight is, of course, a measurement of the file size, usually kilobytes, of a web page, and includes the combined size of all the elements of the page, including the HTML files, the images, audio, or video, or flash animation, and so on. And it can be used to determine the download times for a given page and the variety of internet connection speeds. there's a chart which you should look at in your notes, and it'll lay out for you the difference in load times between a 20 kilobyte page and a 100 kilobyte page. And at high speeds, DSL and cable connections, and then most recently signed pages will download pretty quickly, but at slower speeds, including faster dial-up, even medium-sized pages can take 10 seconds or more to download. And we'll talk about what the impact of that is on your conversion in just a minute. You should have that table in front of you, and it's important to remember page weight includes all the elements in the page. And you also need to note that, you know, that 56 kilobyte dial-up connections are not usually realized in the real world due to phone line noise. This is generally more like a 48 kbps and kilobytes per second. So with that in mind, the big question is, you know, what's the true impact of page weight on conversion? Brian, you'll note the way I stated that. We'll talk about that later. Positive impact of reducing page weight benefits both website owners and consumers is significant. Of course, your pages load faster, which is the most obvious benefit. And the lower load page load times create more comfortable visitors, and visitors are less likely to become frustrated and go elsewhere if your page loads quickly. Faster loading times will contribute to increased conversion, which is critical, and your brand perception is enhanced. To look at that, I rarely ever refer to anyone else's research because we do primary research here as opposed to aggregate somebody else's work. But we do have a table here related to visitor abandonment from eMarketer. Take a look at this table. Brian, go ahead and show them.
Yeah, you'll have to refresh your page, and you should see it now if you do that.
If you refresh your page, you'll see the next table. And the percentage of users waiting, and I think, Brian, in the actual report we released, we need to restate that in a different way unless we're – I don't think that's clear what that means, but waiting for the load or continuing to wait is the key. Look at this chart at 10 seconds, 15, 20, and 30 seconds. What you need to understand is just over half of visitors, you will lose half your visitors with page times of longer than 15 seconds. And only 5% of your visitors will wait longer than 30 seconds. Now, talk about conversion for just a moment. Let's get practical, and I want to mention some points here that aren't necessarily my notes, but are critical. Most of us believe that long copy sells. I believe long copy sells better than short copy in most situations. I believe it yet again because we just finished some research that we've already published, and in that research we saw yet again that long copy outpulled short copy, all factors being equal. Now, there's a few exceptions, but in general, a long page is going to pull better. However, if your page is long or long and heavy because, you know, when that length of the page is a number of graphics included with your text, et cetera, you may find out that your page isn't converting as it should simply because, you know, if people are waiting 20 seconds to see the page, you're losing 75% of your audience. What does that do to your conversion ratio? Well, you can imagine it cuts your conversion ratio. We could guess that it cuts your conversion ratio by 75%. On the other hand, I would point out a mitigating factor is the fact that if somebody does wait that long to see your page, they're probably a more qualified customer. So I don't think it would be a flat 75% adjustment. In either case, you can't afford to lose that much of your audience. So this is a significant issue. And it's significant because for another reason, we just did a major project. I don't know if we have a before and after. Do we have that ready, Cliff?
Jimmy may have it up and ready.
I just sent you a message with two links and a comparison of the HTML page size of before and after page.
All right, now, let me. Jimmy, guys, we're doing this live. This isn't in our notes, so bear with us as we carry this for you, but I think it's really worthwhile for us to take the extra, you know, aggravation of getting these links to you. Jimmy, send those to Brian and have him refresh those links, put them in their notes.
Yeah, Jimmy, if you can email it to me and not use a semester, that would be great.
Okay.
That's not too much of a hassle.
All right, so I'm going to set this up, and then we're going to look at pages. But one of the things that we did was we took a long copy page, and it was written in the traditional long copy style. It's kind of ugly, kind of cumbersome, but the people who are behind it are have great integrity, and they have a superb track record, and they are making a lot of money. And so they are, it works. And we work to improve it. And essentially, we cut the just the HTML size from 60K back to 24K. Now that's a significant, decrease. It's more than half. And then had a small CSS size, 3.6 kilobyte file. By optimizing the page weight using CSS style sheets, which we're going to talk about, we reduced HTML page weight by 60%. And so what you need to do is, as soon as Brian has that in his notes, we'll take a look at the two pages. And he's going to refresh them into your notes for you, and you'll be able to look at those with us. While that's happening, let me just mention some other things for you. One of the best ways to reduce page weight, I want to talk to you about that. I've got 10 techniques here that we should discuss, and then I've got another extensive set of notes on the benefits of CSS and how to use CSS. On the telephone call to help me explain these things. Sorry, did someone speak? On the telephone call, for the benefit of helping me explain this, I have Cliff Rayner, who is a superb code writer and works full-time on our staff in the optimization group of research, and Jimmy Ellis, who many of you have heard before. Jimmy is in our optimization group also and is you know, very experienced in this. I think you know there are others on here, but these are the two that we may be hearing from the most as we talk about the way to do this. And I think I encourage you, you don't have to ask questions. It's fine to me either way. But some of you, you're not going to get a chance to talk to people who know this as well as these guys do and have done it from an optimization standpoint, not from a standpoint of design functionality, not from a standpoint of attractiveness, but who know how to do it in such a way as to increase the yield per visit on a site by increasing the number of people who stay on a page and buy. So I'm going to start listing some of these key points. And, Brian, you interrupt me when we have these two pages ready so I'll know, and we'll come back and look at them a bit. Okay?
Okay.
Number one, remove all non-essential elements of your pages. Many page elements will serve only to distract the visitor from the primary or even secondary goal of your site. Now, we've talked about this in our site optimization clinics. You need to know what the objective of the web page is, and every element on the page needs to serve that objective, every element. In fact, you should prep the page. You should write across the top what the objective is. You should then look at each main element, like a sign-up form for an email, a link to the Buy More or a the product specials or whatever it is that you have. You should take those elements on your page, and you should assign them a numeric value that equals 100%. Meaning this should be my first priority is probably to get them to click on a product. My second priority is to get them to sign up for an email address. Let's suppose that was your top two priorities. At this point, once you've done that, you need to actually say, okay, then that's going to take 60% of the visitor's attention. This is going to take 30% of the visitor's attention, and everything else we're going to occupy with 10%. Once you know that's what you want to achieve in terms of the visitor's attention, you need to make sure that the elements on your page are serving that. And what you're going to find is that those little banners you stuck there on the side, they're costing you. And that free-for-all program you put over on the right, and that, hey, I'm going to exchange a link with my buddy idea, and that, you know, all those, every time we look at a page, it's full of superfluous. I mean, every time is a, you know, obviously that's not true, but in general, every time we look at a page, there's superfluous elements weighted improperly that are interfering with conversion. If you want a light page, shred them, get rid of them. Speaking of that, we're been beta testing our own site and had it up on a server for 6 months with a new version because we've outgrown our own site. Look for the first of the year when we'll be launching, in the first month of the year, we'll be launching our even leaner version than what we already have. Use CSS cascading style sheets. I'm on point two. CSS can be a very effective way to reduce the load times of your overall site. We'll cover this in more detail in the final section of the report, but it's one of the keys. Avoid frames. Not only do frame pages load more slowly, but some search engines still do not index frame pages correctly. Unless your site requires frames as an absolutely essential part of the design, it is best to avoid them altogether. Number four, this is good, avoid nested tables. I can think of lots of reasons why to avoid nested tables. One of them is weight. Another one is for browser display issues. Inexperienced web designers will often utilize tables inside of tables in order to get the page layout just right. This can be avoided by using a single well-thought-out table for page layout. Utilizing a CSS can often eliminate the need altogether for tables as a formatting device. Talk about that coming up. And also notice that some web design software applications will often use nested tables without your knowledge. When in doubt, check the code. Cliff, would you agree with me that FrontPage has done this? I don't know what it's doing in the latest version, but it certainly has done it in the past.
Yeah, in the past it was very, very, the code from the older versions of FrontPage, at least 2000 anyhow, and back were atrocious.
Yes.
The latest versions I can't speak to because I haven't used it.
Yeah. Compress your images. I think we know this. Most of us don't know how to do it. I'm going to talk about that in a second. Uncompressed JPEGs and GIFs often contain extra data not necessary for their correct display. Most professional graphic programs feature utilities to compress. But you also might find these tools helpful, and we're going to give you some places to go to. Image Compressor and GIF Cruncher.
Those are links 2 and 3 in the notes, Flint, and I've also added the information from Jimmy if everyone will refresh their page. They can, they'll be able to see that now.
Okay, so links 2 and 3 in your notes will give you some places you can go that would help you compress your images. While you're doing that, and since your notes have been refreshed, you can see, if you click on the link, the before page, what, by the way, it's a good product, incidentally, but you look at this before page, which is, let's say, it's not an impressive-looking page, but it gets impressive results. Certainly, look now, once you've seen that and recognize that and look at the weight of that page, you can often see the weight for load time, even in the bottom of, depending on what type of application you pull it up in. But then move to the next page, a more optimized page that we worked on. We were just doing this for an experiment, and you'll notice, of course, a much better page, which is not done yet, incidentally, still being worked on. But this is a long sample of a long copy cell, and along with it, you'll see that despite the fact that this page feels like a lot longer page, say it's only 24K. That's an example of what. Now, by the way, if you want to see a big difference, go to the source code. Go to View, go to the View, and then go to Source, and you'll see, you know, how lean this code is.
Since you have the links on the blog now, there's a link we put in there that will actually show you the analysis of these two pages, and that is the bottom. The third link there under those charts, which is websiteoptimization.com, they have a free utility that you can use, and you can type both of these URLs into, and it will display the report of the HTML size, CSS size, and JavaScript size. One thing you'll notice is on the second version, the smaller version, we also compressed the images, and so the image size is smaller, you'll see in the report. And there's also a JavaScript. Now, on the new page, the JavaScript file is larger, but it's because there's different tracking code on the page and some other back-end JavaScript on the pages that doesn't need to be there. It was only used for a live person and a couple of the utilities that they were using. So it has no effect on the actual display of the page. It's just JavaScript code. So if you type both of those links into the website, optimization.com, website, you will see each of those reports, and we'll show you the, like I said, the HTML, CSS, JavaScript size, and image size. And I would suggest using that on every, you know, anytime you're building out a new page or a new design, I would definitely check and see what size your page is. And it even gives you a comparison chart for load times, and it'll tell you how many seconds your page is loading in on a 56K modem or T1 line or DSL. Or it's actually a very handy little tool.
Anybody have questions about these pages? I'm going to move on through the notes, but any questions? Okay. All right, so let's keep moving then. Point number 6, always use height and width tags in your images. This will allow the page to appear on the screen before all the images are loaded. This is especially true in older web browsers. And even in newer browsers, images with heights and width tags will allow the page to load normally without having to resize itself as the images load. Images without size attributes often manifest as the infamous page jump down that will really annoy your visitors. Remove number seven, remove extra white space in your code. Every space, tab, and new line characters in your HTML code requires extra data in the page. Thus, limit their use and pay attention to what extra space is inserted by your design software. Some page design software programs, notably Dreamweaver, have extensions that can be added for the removal of white space. Running these tools before uploading your pages can often eliminate several kilobytes of extraneous data from your. You can also run a simple search and replace on your pages, telling the software to replace. Basically, it's the way the code looks is replace quotation mark greater than sign blank less than sign quotation mark with and then quote sign greater than sign no blank greater than straight to less than sign quotation mark. Assuming you didn't understand what I just said, it'll be in the written report we release. Yeah. Number eight, break up long copy. Now, while long copy can be an effective means of marketing your products or services, long copy pages taken to the extreme may take so long to load that they'll lose visitors and join the wait. Consider breaking up long copy and also make sure, you know, there's a difference between a long copy sales page and just a page that's crammed with competing elements, crammed with, a long document, no iPath. Most of the pages I see that are long are not well fine-tuned sales pages. They're just poor site design and someone who's too lazy to go back and cut that up and think about it through the eyes of one of their readers and make sure that it's really, really easy to navigate through with your eyes. Number nine. By the way, there's another link for more on long copy versus short copy. You can see our report on that. I referenced that earlier, and that's link number what, Brian?
That's number four in the notes.
Clean up your code with tools. A number of free and commercial tools are available online to clean up your code. We just talked about some of this, but reducing page weight without affecting how your page is displayed. Two of the most popular tools are NetMechanic and Dr. Watson. Those are links in your report also. And there are additional site optimization and page weight tools listed in the literature review at the end of this report. Don't miss those literature reviews. There's a lot of good things in there. The key point is this, don't use these online tools without first making a backup copy of your pages. Yeah. They sometimes produce errors in the code. Were you going to say something, Cliff, about that?
Yeah, I was just going to interject that if you didn't.
Okay. That's a critical point. Cliff and Jimmy, I'm going to say the 10th part of this poll before I touch on CSS, but I'll let you guys jump in with any other insights. Feel free to interrupt at any time, guys, anybody on my team here. And if you got a question, it's okay to ask. But if you choose to design for a specific connection speed, pay close attention to your target audience. For example, high-speed connections are more common in the workplace than at homes and in wealthier households than in poor ones. You may place more or less emphasis on optimizing your page weight depending on your target audience. Having said that and moved through these 10, does anybody on my optimization team have any thoughts about anything to be added or explanations here?
Sure. There's other implications to the page weight, and they go hand in hand with organic search engine optimization and your site's ability to get indexed in the engines. When you have really clean, good, solid code, typically your pages will be indexed much better, and actually a larger amount of pages will be indexed because the page isn't as large. So say, for example, you have a 150K size page compared to a 50K size page. Usually a site like Google will index more 50K size pages than 150K pages because it's not going to spend the time to sit there and plug through thousands of 150K pages. So if it's simpler, it's leaner code, it's easier to read for their system, they'll typically index more because sometimes if you check how many pages are indexed on your site, it might only be 500 to 1,500 pages. A lot of times if you reduce the page weight, they'll actually index additional pages if there's nothing else holding the engine back. On the other angle with some of the page weight is it's literally bandwidth. So if you're on a high volume site and there are thousands, if you're doing tens of thousands of unique visitors a day or millions of page loads a month, you will actually save money in bandwidth from your ISP because the bandwidth back and forth to your server of pages loading to customers is less. You could have the same identical traffic, and if your page weight went from 150K to 75K, you would actually pay less in traffic or bandwidth from your ISP because the page is a little smaller by having cleaner code. So it's kind of an interesting way to think of it in that respect. But you take a site like Amazon.com, and you optimize their pages for page weight, and they would save, you know, tens of thousands of dollars a month in bandwidth.
And also, and the point about the search engines is very critical. When he's talking about indexing, he's talking about the way that the engines are viewing your site and ranking it in terms of their engine. So, our placement. So, those are very good points. And
can I interject one thing in relation to that?
Yes.
Also, when you're using CSS, yes. Also, when you're using CSS in a site, if you're using CSS and adds to the positioning, what it also enables you to do is put your most important content at the top of your code. When the spiders are crawling the pages, they get to the important content first and more likely to get it spidered because it's not important the order the code shows up in the back end for the way it displays in the page. So you can have your content at the beginning, or you can have your navigation at the bottom of the page, and the CSS controls where it displays on the page, so you can put all the best stuff at the top.
So the best stuff can be at the top in the code, but it will display, it doesn't have to display at the top, it will display any way you'd like it. That's one of the benefits of CSS, and that's a very good point, Cliff. I'm going to talk about CSS, and I assume you guys will want to jump in more here. So let me talk about the benefits of using a CSS cascading style sheets, by the way. That's what that stands for. Cascading style sheets often, they create a number of key advantages for the website owner. We talked to Cliff, who is a specialist in our team in this area, and he's laid out 8 primary benefits here, and we'll go over them together with you. But let me just point out, let me just go through it, and then I'll see if I need to say any more here. CSS accommodates forward compatibility. Some depreciated elements will one day no longer be supported in browsers. These elements include the font tag, the center tag, and the background element of the body tag. Now, what it means by forward compatibility, I can explain. Cliff, do you want to explain that?
You can go ahead. You're much better communicator.
No, I mean, did you write this? Brian pulled this from you. Go ahead and tell him what you mean.
Well, with forward compatibility, you mentioned a few things like background tags and the body tag, but also background tags, table, data tags, and so forth. What happens is right now, even though some of the stuff is still supported, newer versions of the browsers, what may happen to your website is all of a sudden your website stops working properly and doesn't display properly because the browsers no longer support those things. Currently, they still do. We don't know how much longer. The last final standard's already come out for HTML. We're going to other things like XHTML and XML. So it is dated, it's time, sensitive, so
yeah.
Who knows how much longer in the future your site's still going to display properly if you use depreciated elements in it.
And so essentially CSS will keep you from having that problem because it doesn't rely on the same old system. Number 2, CSS effectively separates content from presentation. In other words, to change the content of your site, you would only modify one file. To change the presentation of that content, you would change a different file. Now that means you'd have essentially 2 files. The CSS style sheet would represent what your site looks like, and the content would be in a separate file. Now this is really good. For those of you that aren't that aren't programmers, essentially on your primary content page, there is a call in the code for a CSS file. That's a separate file. And that file, its perimeters determine how that content is displayed, meaning it determines what the headers look like, what the color of the font looks like, et cetera, et cetera. Now, what's critical about that, that one of the things that I think that's really interesting about that is not only can you change content easier this way, but you can actually make one file change and universally change the whole look of your site. Now, your site might have more than one CSS file. But essentially, you could have one CSS file and change your entire site or all the pages in that we'll call category. And so CSS makes it much, much easier for you to modify the way your site displays. Number 3, CSS allows you to create different style sheets for different media, such as the web, printer-friendly pages, PDAs, and you can create different style sheets for the various web browsers. You know, with CSS, someone can come in, you can read what browser they're on, and display your page differently for that browser than for another. And here's the key point. CSS reduces file size because it decreases the amount of markup in the HTML. And CSS eliminates, by the way, if you don't know what markup is in the HTML, the markup is essentially the additional tag that you provide to tell in HTML what you want that particular word to look like, or letter, or you know, string of data to look like when it's displayed in someone's browser. You don't need all of that markup with a CSS style sheet because all that's being derived from that special file that we discussed. CSS eliminates the need for page elements such as the one pixel spacer image that we all used to wrestle with, and multiple font tags and nested tables and similar items. Here's another key point. Using an external style sheet allows for the caching of the styles so that the browser does not have to reload it with each new page, thus reducing the time for subsequent pages to load. Does this mean that after the first page is loaded, when you use your back button or you reference the same elements, it's much faster for the display time? And there's obviously a reason behind that, which we barely touched on. But the net effect here is that your user is getting a better experience. Number six, CSS allows for global control. I mentioned this earlier. You change a single property in the external file, and it changes the appearance of that element for the entire website. CSS speeds up redesign. You don't have to rewrite all the HTML code. You can simply make changes in the style sheet. Number eight, CSS gives you more powerful control over the elements of your pages. You can control basic elements such as font, size, and color, as well as very high-level elements like the precise location of objects, you know, graphics, and paragraphs, and so on. So there are a number of CSS-related resources listed in our literature review that can help you learn more about this. And Cliff, on our staff here, has volunteered for any one of our readers who is having difficulty with CSS. He's promised either fly directly to your location and give you some personal assistance, or write really long emails to you with detailed instructions. So, you know, our optimization guys, they just love to spend time interacting with people. So that's a bit on CSS. The impact of just a few key improvements in the overall page weight of your site can quite substantially can make a substantial impact on your numbers. In fact, Brian, I want to include a table of this effect in the final report we release. But you know, here's the practical side of everything. If your page is lighter, your users have a better experience. If your users have a better experience, you can achieve a better conversion ratio. And if we could show this right now on a number of variables that you could do from a lighter page or from CSS control, all of which would contribute to a higher conversion ratio. One would be better browser display. Better browser display would, you know, get more people who read your offer, which relates to more sales. Another would be more people who just wait for the page to load. You know, and a third one and a fourth one could be generated. A third one might be that a page could reconfigure itself for a particular marketing channel that comes in and is recognized, and then a different CSS file is used so that you have what I would call specificity in its display, which really impacts conversion. For all of these reasons and more, we recommend that you pay a lot of attention to page weight and that you take significant time to understand how CSS might help you. All right? That's all I have to say today. Is there any questions before we close out?
I interject one thing before we close out.
Yes, you sure may. Also, be sure and give everybody your home phone number.
Yeah, I'll do that. Thank you very much. One other thing, if you want to see the power of CSS at work, there is a site called CSS Zen Garden or Zen Gardens. I don't know if it's in the notes or not. And what they've done there, it's a site set up so that graphically oriented designers can go in there and play around. And what happens is, the rules are you can't change the HTML file, all you can change is the CSS, and it will absolutely blow your mind all the things that they can do with CSS without
changing
HTML.
Neat. You'd have to see it to believe the incredible changes you can make to a page by just changing the CSS. I didn't mean to cut you off, Cliff. Are you done?
Fine. I'm done. Just if maybe Brian, if you don't have that in the notes yet, you might want to drop that in there.
Yes, it's very true. Okay. Any other thoughts or questions before we are dismissed? All right. I thank you for coming. By the way, there's a lot of things in the new year we're going to be doing. There really is. I mean, it's pretty remarkable. I'm afraid to say them yet, but they're really good. So you just stick around. I'll make the announcements over the next couple of weeks. And it's going to save you a lot of money, and it's going to get you a lot more information that are very specific to what you might be needing. So let us know as you hear these things if they're helpful for you. And we appreciate everyone's trust, and you take care. Thanks.